On the whole, they funded the underground as a means to political power. Mostly younger sons who weren't going to inherit, or at least not fast enough to suit them, and therefore had to look for advancement where they could. They wore no disguises. The underground didn't trust them any further than they could spit into the wind with their mouths closed, and were determined to know exactly who they were dealing with, if only so they could get them later if things went wrong. The aristocrats went along with much bad grace. It wasn't as if they had a choice. You only came to the underground when there was nowhere else to go. Evangeline Schreck he knew from before, and her appearance here was no surprise. A fervent supporter of the Clone Underground in recent times, for reasons which remained obscure. David Deathstalker was a new face. He'd inherited the title after Owen was outlawed, and didn't look any too pleased about it. Only 17 years old, a minor cousin, unused to the hothouse intrigues of the Imperial Court. Tall, immaculately dressed, and possibly not as nervous as he appeared. Handsome enough to set a few hearts fluttering at court, but young enough not to know that yet. Or maybe not. He was a Deathstalker, after all. He'd acquired the title by default. Owen had no brothers or sisters. The supposedly genetic quirk that gave Deathstalkers the boost also killed most children before they reached maturity. The family considered it an acceptable risk. No one ever asked the children what they thought about it. So far, David's motivation seemed clear enough. He wanted to avoid being outlawed like Owen, or executed like Owen's father, and was smart enough to know he had absolutely no allies at court. The Deathstalker name had become synonymous with treason and bad luck, and most people were keeping well clear in case it rubbed off. The third face held Valentine's interest the longest. Kit Summerisle, called by some Kid Death, who murdered his own family in the name of ambition, only to find himself alone, trusted neither by the court nor any family. A mad dog who'd slipped his leash. Presumably Kit was there as a backer of the underground because no one else would touch him. The Empress had played with him for a while, but Kit had to be wise enough to know that wouldn't last. He was too dangerous, a sword that might just as easily turn on anyone who tried to wield it. Kid Death, the smiling killer, resplendent as always in his armor of black and silver. He looked very young, with his pale face and flyaway blonde hair, but the icy blue eyes were very old. They'd seen enough death for a dozen lifetimes, and loved every minute of it. Valentine stepped forward and bowed courteously to Evangeline Schreck. "Dear Evangeline, so good to see you again. Pity about the wedding, but that's life, or rather death. Your father always did have a propensity to overreact."
"That's one way of putting it. You look quite different without your face on, Valentine. Almost human."
"A mere illusion." He turned to the young Deathstalker and bowed again, not quite as low.
"I have not had the pleasure, I believe, sir. David, isn't it?
I am..." "I know who you are. And it's pronounced David, actually."
"As you wish. But I fear you too must learn to come when the underground calls, however they pronounce your name. There's no room down here for the airs and graces we allow ourselves in society. That is, after all, part of the charm of treason. There are no rules here, no required behavior, no one to make us kneel or bow the head. We are equal here. And all they ask of us is a willingness to fight, and if need be, die for the cause."
"Then why are you here, Valentine? You never cared for any cause save your own continuing self-destruction."
Valentine took his time turning, and smiled at Kid Death.
"Where better to seek death or transformation than in the midst of rebellion? There's only one place on Golgotha more dangerous than the underground, and that's the arena. And that's always seemed too much like hard work for me. I'm really rather delicate, you know."
"You have the constitution of an ox. Your system has to be in top form to put up with all the things you do to it."
"I know why he's here. He wants the drug, the Esper drug. Trust me, Valentine, if you did get it, you wouldn't like it. You'd find out what everyone really thinks of you."
Valentine smiled dazzlingly.
"You already know what everyone thinks of you, dear Kit, and it hasn't slowed you down any."
"I want to know why Hood is allowed to hide his face," said David. "We weren't allowed to, even though it meant having to expose our faces in front of brain-damaged cases like Valentine and Kid Death."
"How unkind. No one appreciates a true artist."
Kid Death looked steadily at David.
You really must learn to choose your words more carefully, Deathstalker. You never know when they might be your last.
David looked at him defiantly. His hand was very near his sword.
You don't frighten me, Summer Isle.
Then he should. I've seen you both fight, and he'd win. Now, if you two have both finished shaking your genitalia at each other, perhaps we could hear Hood answer the question about his anonymity. Personally, I'm all ears.
Kid Death and David Deathstalker looked at each other, and David looked away first. Valentine studied him thoughtfully. Perhaps the young Deathstalker wasn't as naive as he seemed. The Summer Isle was a psychopath, and everyone knew it. If he were to turn those cold eyes in Valentine's direction, Valentine had every intention of bowing low and backing down, and then possibly dropping a little something special in the Summer Isle's drink at some future time. He looked across at Hood as he realized the silence had lengthened, and Hood still hadn't answered the question. The man without a face stood very still, the empty interior of his hood as enigmatic as ever.
I am valuable to the underground and the cyberrats. They indulge me rather than risk losing what I provide.
And what might that be?
You don't need to know.
But we insist.
David and Kid Death moved unhurriedly toward Hood, taking up positions on either side of him so that he couldn't face them both at once. Their hands were very near their swords.
That's enough,
snapped Mr. Perfect, and everyone turned to look. The Esper representative glared at them all impartially.
We did not summon you here to squabble like children in a playground. We have business to discuss, and the longer we stay here, gathered together in one place, the more danger we put ourselves in.
Damn right!
One of the Stevie Blues strode forward to take up a position in the center of the chamber, hands on hips.
Security would just love to get the drop on us because we were too busy arguing among ourselves to hear them coming. Everyone stops messing about right now, or my sisters and I will start banging heads together. You can call me Stevie One. My sisters are Two and Three. Don't get us mixed up or we'll hit you. We pride ourselves on our individuality.
There was a general relaxing and moving away by all those present. Stevie One nodded to Mr. Perfect to take over. David sniffed at the three clones.
I didn't know there were any Esper clones left alive. I thought they were all wiped out and further experimentation forbidden.
Lots of things are forbidden. But they still happen if there's profit to be made. As I understand it, the Stevie Blues were a secret military experiment in cloning battle Espers. Didn't work out. Most of the subjects died, and the survivors were too powerful, too uncontrollable, unpredictable. Word about the experiments got out, and the Empress was furious that she hadn't been consulted. Gave the order to close everything down. The Stevie Blues were marked for execution, but they escaped. The elves took them in, gave them a purpose in life and a shape for their revenge. As both Espers and clones, there was supposed to be a link between the two undergrounds, but no one seems too sure where their true loyalties lie. Perhaps even they're not sure.
Fair enough. I still want to know why Hood hides his face.
Oh, tell him,
said the dragon,
or we'll be here all night.
I am highly placed in the Empress's retinue. I have her trust inasmuch as she trusts anyone. I am not ready to endanger myself by revealing my identity to those who don't need to know. The underground indulges me because I discovered the Esper drug. None of us can afford for the Empress to learn about that. They'd get the secret out of me eventually. They always do. My identity remains a secret because it is in all our best interests. Now, we have business to discuss.
Then get on with it. What exactly is so important that we had to be dragged here at such short notice and at such an ungodly hour?
We have a plan. We elves have placed one of our own in the water purification department. Through him, we have unlimited access to the water supply network for the whole of Golgotha. We propose to introduce the Esper drug into the water system. I'm told a really small amount, as little as one part per million, would be enough to have an effect on anyone who drank it or even had contact with the affected water. No one would notice its presence until it was far too late. No one knows it exists but us, and unless you knew exactly what you were looking for, the Esper drug would just blend in with all the other drugs in the water. It's pumped full of happy drugs and tranquilizers as it is, to keep the common herd quiet. With millions of Espers suddenly appearing overnight, The Empress will have no choice but to recognize Espers as full citizens, with full privileges. After all, most of her subjects would be Espers, along with most of her own people. Who knows? Maybe we'll get really lucky and she'll get a surprise in her drink, too.
There was a long pause as everyone took it in turn to look at each other. The Stevie Blues smiled at each other smugly.
You have got to be joking. You're crazy.
Oh, I don't know. I rather like the sound of it myself.
You would. Anyone who is anyone drinks off-world bottled water. Only the lower classes drink tap water, and the Empress would rather wipe out every single one of them on this planet than be dictated to.
Nicely put. Didn't think you had it in you, David.
David.
Don't push it, Deathstalker.
Look, the Esper and Clone Undergrounds have been fighting for self-determination for almost 3 centuries. And what have we to show for it? Nothing but increased security on all levels and greater controls over the Clone and Esper populations. The Elves emerged out of a need to strike back, to take the attack to the enemy. This would be a blow against the Empress's authority that couldn't be hidden or hushed up. A whole planetful of Espers couldn't be ignored. They'd be too valuable just to be wiped out. Right,
said Stevie Three. There was a flood of approval from the cyber rats on the surrounding view screens. They were always up for a little orchestrated chaos and mayhem, and they admired audacity. They'd always been troublemakers first and rebels second. The various faces on the screens began shouting advice and support, and then started shouting at each other to shut up, until finally one of the Esper representatives had the sense to turn the volume right down. The cyber rats raved silently on, oblivious to the fact that no one was listening to them anymore. They were used to that.
You're still carefully overlooking the main objection. According to the figures I've seen, the Esper drug kills 20-40% of those who take it. If we gave it to the entire population of Golgotha, how many innocents would die for our revenge?
None of them are innocent. They're all a part of the system that brutalizes us. They're happy enough to profit from our pain. Right. When have they ever cared for us?
Stevie One glared at Evangeline.
What do you think we should do? Commit suicide in public as a protest like that poor fool you smuggled into the wedding? What difference did it make? No one gave a damn. They don't care if an Esper or a clone dies. We're just property. They can just replace us. It's not like we were people. Do I need to stand here and tell you horror stories of the way we've been treated to justify our plan? We've all lost someone dear. It's barely a year since Dram and his butchers attacked our base in New Hope. That was supposed to be our first step forward, out of the darkness and into the light. Espers and clones and normals, living together in harmony. A living example of the way things could be. And then the attack sleds came falling out of the sky, opening fire without warning. Hundreds of thousands died as the city burned. Men, women, and children. Espers, clones, and normals. There was nothing we could do but run for our lives. It took us a year to rebuild the underground, and now all the normals are too scared even to be seen with us. Every chance we had for peaceful coexistence died with New Hope. All that's left is the Elves and the armed struggle. Did our friends die for nothing? Have you forgotten the screams bursting through our minds, blinking out one by one, like candles caught in a storm?
Revenge,
said one of the male clones, and everyone turned to look. The four men had been quiet so long, everyone had forgotten they were there.
Revenge is all Elves ever want. We want peace, freedom. We have to learn to live with the normals because it's their universe, their empire. One day it might be ours, but none of us will live to see it. Pardon our paranoia, but we can't see how a planet full of traumatized Espers mourning their dead would do anything to further the clone cause. The Empire would waste no time in blaming the undergrounds. We'd be branded mass murderers, and they'd be right. Everyone would turn against us, even the new Espers.
He's got a point. I really don't think I can go along with this.
No one asked you, David. You don't understand what we're talking about.
Presumably, you have some interest in our opinions, or else why were we called here?
The shimmering mandala spoke.
We value your input. We are unable to decide. It occurred to us that perhaps we are too close to the question. Hopefully you will help us see the wider issues. The Esper drug could be the means to our finally winning the war. Or it could damn us all forever. Talk to us, all of you. We must decide.
There's still a lot we don't understand about the drug. We were understandably intrigued with the thought of what the drug would do to someone who was already an Esper. We hoped it might produce the super Esper we've been searching for, someone strong enough to overcome the effects of the S-blocker and free us from its control. We had many volunteers.
So, what happened?
They all died,
said the dragon.
Some were killed outright. Some went insane and then died. Some tore out their own eyes because of what they were seeing. It would seem we're not ready as a species to become super espers. We must continue to rely on our cyber rat friends to come up with a technological answer.
They've been promising a breakthrough on that for years. We're tired of waiting. This drug is our chance to strike back at those who've hurt us. We can't wait. How long can it be before some traitor in our organizations gets hold of the formula and hands it over to security? Just because we're espers, it doesn't mean we can't be fooled. We must use the drug now, while we still have the advantage of surprise. Right. Who cares about a few dead normals?
We care,
said one of the male clones.
Our argument has always been that we are not just property. We are humans, too. We will not risk that humanity by becoming responsible for mass slaughter.
You've always been dreamers. We can't live with normals. They're too different.
They seem to have managed quite successfully on Mistworld.
Yeah, well, from what I've heard, it's a right hellhole. I wouldn't live there if you paid me.
We're drifting away from the subject again. It seems to me there are still too many unanswered questions about the Esper drug. Firstly, we can't be sure of a mortality rate of just 20-40% when dealing with such a large dose. It could turn out to be much higher. Word would get out eventually as to who was responsible. That's inevitable. And then the normals would hate us as never before. Secondly, I think getting the drug past all the checks and filters would prove to be a great deal harder than you've been assuming. One man on his own couldn't hope to oversee everything. I think we should ask the cyber rats to run some computer simulations first. In the meantime, I think we'd do better to concentrate our efforts on bringing influential people to see the justice of our cause. The real war will be fought and won in the hearts and minds of people everywhere. After all, the Empress can't live forever. Perhaps a coalition of the right people could even replace her in the future.
Right. A coalition. You'd love that. With you at its head, no doubt.
We have heard enough.
The dragon stretched slowly, light rippling across its golden scales.
Evangeline Shrek has provided the voice of reason, as always. We do not reject the idea outright. But it is clear that much more research must be undertaken before we can commit ourselves. The matter is now closed.
And that was when everything went to hell in a hurry. An alarm sounded, loud and strident, and over it came the sound of energy guns firing. All around the walls of the chamber, the cyber rats vanished from the view screens as they dropped out of the system. For a moment, there was only the hissing of blank screens, and then they cleared one by one to show rapidly changing views of armed guards running through the approach tunnels. They were everywhere, filling the tunnels, firing their disruptors at unseen Esper resistance. Whatever the Esper sentries were doing, it didn't seem to be slowing the guards down any.
Why aren't they using illusions to stop the guards? I thought that was what they were there for.
Look at the screens. They've got S-blockers. Look at the uniforms. Those are Imperial guards, the Empress's own. She knew there'd be important people here.
And then everyone was shouting at once and trying to outshout everyone else. David Deathstalker and Kit Summerisle had their guns and swords in their hands, but only Kid Death looked ready to use them. Hood was looking from one screen to another, as though he couldn't believe what he was seeing. Evangeline had gone very pale, but her hands had clenched into fists. She looked at Valentine, who smiled and made helpless motions with his hands. Behind his flustered facade, Valentine was thinking fast. He had any number of battle drugs ready to drop into his system at a moment's notice, but he was reluctant to throw away his carefully established persona until he absolutely had to. It wouldn't do for word to get out that he wasn't the useless type he'd always pretended to be. People might start wondering what else he'd been hiding. On the other hand, he couldn't afford to be taken prisoner by the guards for much the same reason. He decided to wait and see how much danger he was really in. And then the Esper representatives vanished between one moment and the next, and the air rushed in to fill the space where they'd been.
The bastards! They've teleported out and left us to die!
There were six entrances giving out into the chamber, none of them big enough for more than two men to pass through at a time. The Stevie Blues covered three of them, psionic flames leaping menacingly from their hands. Kit moved to cover another and gestured for David to take the next. Kid Death was grinning broadly. David looked as though he'd rather be anywhere else, but his eyes were calm and his mouth was firm, and he held his sword and his gun as though it was the most natural thing in the world. He was a Deathstalker after all. That left one opening gaping unattended. Hood was still frozen in place before the screens. Evangeline started toward the entrance as though she might break into a run at any moment, but Valentine stopped her with a hand on her arm.
Don't. Trying to run would be a really bad idea. Look at the screens. The guards have got all the escape routes covered, and at the moment they're shooting at anything that isn't them. There's nowhere to go.
You don't understand. I can't afford to be caught.
Valentine raised an eyebrow.
I think you'll find that's true for most of us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd better guard that entrance.
Evangeline looked at him.
You? What are you going to do? Bribe your way past the guards with handfuls of drugs?
Oh, I'll think of something. Besides, there's no one else, is there?
Evangeline looked at Hood, still rooted to the spot, and looked away.
Give me a knife. I won't be taken alive.
Valentine studied her for a long moment, then drew a long stiletto from his boot and handed it to her. She accepted it with a nod of thanks and moved over to stand beside Hood and watch the screens. Valentine moved unhurriedly over to the gaping entrance. He was still thinking hard. He'd put a lot of time and effort into his usual persona, and now it seemed he was going to have to throw it away. As usual, man proposes, and the Empress disposes. And then a thought came to him, and he smiled. He didn't know what he was so worried about. The odds were he was going to die anyway. The thought cheered him, and he checked the contents of his pillbox for something special. Some of the guards were in for a very unpleasant surprise. The first armed men rounded a corner and found themselves face to face with Stevie One, guarding the entrance. They raised their guns, and the Esper hit them with a blast of white-hot flames. The guards screamed as the blazing fire filled the tunnel, sucking the air from their lungs as it crisped their flesh. More guards appeared in the adjacent tunnels, only to meet Stevie's two and three. They summoned up fire, and the leading guards died horribly. Evangeline watched them die on the view screens and wouldn't let herself look away. The remaining guards came to a halt in the tunnels as word of the deaths got to them. They were waiting for something.
They're bringing the S-blockers forward! I can feel them getting closer! My flame's already beginning to die down!
More guards spilled into a different tunnel, only to find Kid Death waiting for them. He shot the first men with almost lazy precision, and then put the gun away and waded into the guards, swinging his sword double-handed. In the narrow tunnel, they could only come at him two at a time, and that was no threat to Kid Death. He laughed as he worked, a light, breathy, and altogether horrible sound. David Deathstalker boosted, and all his worries fell away. The guards were no match for him, either. But there were so many of them, and neither Kit nor David had any illusions about their eventual fate. If the guards had only had more guns, it would have been over by now. And then Evangeline shouted and pointed at the view screens, and Valentine heard a familiar roar deep in the tunnels. He looked back at the screens and grinned broadly. The guards in the tunnel heard him laughing, and then they heard the roar building behind them and turned to look. A wall of rushing water came thundering toward them, filling the tunnel from floor to ceiling. For a moment, Valentine thought it was the illusion again, a last-ditch defense by the Espers, but even as he thought that, he knew it had to be genuine. All those Espers were dead or blocked by now. The water was real. And up on the view screens, the pounding waves smashed into the guards and swept them away. They never stood a chance. Valentine moved back to stand with Evangeline and Hood, and watched the guards die on the screens. The water carried them along like leaves in a flooded drain, hammering them against the sides of the tunnels, and then pulling them on. A few tried to grab at the tunnel supports, but the pressure of the water was too much for them, and there was no air anywhere. They drowned, quickly if they were lucky, and their dead bodies bobbed limply in the surging tide. David and Kit cut down the last of their opponents, then looked around confused for more. David was panting and shaking as he fell out of boost, but his face was full of exhilaration. Kid Death was smiling gently, not even breathing heavily. But they both had the same look in their eyes, the same satisfied pleasure, and they saw it in each other like a secret shared. One of the Stevie Blues whooped with joy, and the other two joined in.
The S-blockers have been destroyed or swept away. I can't feel them anymore. We're safe.
Not necessarily.
Valentine pointed at the view screens.
All that water is heading our way, and there's nothing here to stop it.
They all saw it on the screens and backed away from the entrances. The pounding of the water was louder now, like a never-ending roll of thunder, and they could feel the pressure of its coming on the air, its awful weight vibrating through the chamber floor. On the view screens, dead guards tumbled through the rushing water like so many blank-eyed dolls. Everyone backed away from the entrances, coming together in the middle of the chamber because there was nowhere else to go. They watched their death coming on the screens, and no one had anything to say. The Stevie Blues held hands, and Evangeline held Valentine's arm. He smiled briefly and led her. Then the tidal wave slammed into an invisible barrier and fell back, thwarted. The water churned on the view screens, pounding this way and that, but couldn't enter the chamber. The air shimmered, and the Esper representatives were suddenly back in the chamber. Mr. Perfect smiled at their surprise.
You didn't really think we'd just abandon you, did you?
If I wasn't feeling so good, I'd kill every damn one of you. And I might anyway, on general principles.
Damn right. I must have aged 20 years in the past few minutes. Mind you, on me it looks good.
The two men laughed together companionably. The Stevie Blues were laughing too. Evangeline noticed she was still holding Valentine's arm and let go. He bowed to her courteously. Hood was slowly shaking his head.
You think by now I'd be used to Espers and their devious ways. I assume you have some way of draining the water out of the tunnel so we can leave?
Of course. It shouldn't take long, and then you can all go.
I should be careful where you tread, though, said Valentine Wolfe. You never know what you'll find in the water these days.
The man called Hood walked unhurriedly through the quiet corridors deep in the heart of the Empress's palace. They were broad, high-ceilinged corridors, with tasteful paintings and portraits on the walls by whoever was currently in fashion. Hollows were so gauche. People came and went on silent, important missions, passing Hood by without noticing him. The same low-level esp that hid his face among espers was more than enough to keep him hidden from normal people he didn't want to see him. He wasn't actually invisible, he just gave their minds a little nudge, and they looked everywhere except at him. Luckily, S-blockers were rare and expensive enough that they were only used in actual rooms, not in the connecting corridors. A serious security lapse that Hood had taken care never to point out. Never knew when you might need an ace up your sleeve, particularly when dealing with the Empress. Lionstone had raised paranoia to an art form, and encouraged its growth among her people. Hood also carried a small tech inhibitor that kept his image from appearing on any of the security monitors. A simple device that triggered a program he'd entered into the security computers, which in turn edited him out of the image appearing on the monitors. The device reminded each camera as he approached, and then made it forget him once he was past. No trouble at all for someone with his access to security computers,